You are listening to Gender Troubles Now. I am your co-host, Cindy Renee Provencio, and I am here with our other co-host, Susan Golightly. We are interviewing Cindy Livingston from SAS, and our topic for today is Mental Health Awareness Month, and you are listening to Gender Troubles on KURU 89.1. FM, and you can also stream us on the web at gmcr.org. And so we're going to go ahead and get things started. Cindy, can you introduce yourself and say what you do at SAS?
Yes. Hey, thank you guys so much for inviting me to have this discussion. I'm Cindy Livingston, as you said, and I've been providing mental health therapy for adults, teens, and children since 2016, and I'm very proud to say I'm an independently licensed therapist.
Good nice. For you. Yeah. And how does that make it different as opposed to not being independently licensed?
Before I got my independent licensure, I had to have supervision. So that is the main difference. I could still see people as I do now, but I'm just more independent now.
Oh, nice. I want to go back. I don't know if we introduced ourselves.
I did.
Well, you didn't introduce me.
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
I didn't hear it. Well, it's hard to hear with all there's fans going on in here, and I have a hard time hearing, but I'm Susan Golightly, and this is Renee Provencio and Cynthia Livingston, and we're so happy that you're here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and we had a whole list of questions, and probably we'll ignore them, but we'll try to keep with them. And our second thing we want to ask you, so you work at SAS.
Yes.
And what's your role there?
Well, I provide therapy for primarily children, teens, and some adults. I have a few adults on my caseload. I typically see clients once a week unless they need more, and then I will see them more, but typically I see people once a week.
Yeah, let's go back, and SAS Sexual Assault Support Services.
Yes.
It's actually Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services. And so a lot of people that you see and come to you may be traumatized, or maybe experiencing, if they're young, a situation at home that could have been traumatizing or was. And so that's, or you could be dealing with people that have had sexual abuse.
Absolutely. And that is the primary requirement for people to come to SAS, is that they've had a sexual assault. But there are two ways that people can come to SAS without having had a sexual assault. One is if someone has vicarious trauma, which means that trauma didn't happen to them directly, but maybe to a family member or to a close friend. People who have vicarious trauma can seek out services through SAS. Also, we have recently become a child advocacy center, and so we're able to provide services, me as a therapist and the other staff that works at SAS, for children who have had maybe domestic violence in their home, and they have to go through a forensic interview, which is one of the facets of SAS, is that we do forensic interviews, and we have a wonderful woman who's done it for a while. Her name is Shannon Honey. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, it's so basically, do you get depressed if you're dealing with trauma all the time?
Oh, that is a very good question. I have, because of the college I went to Southwestern in Santa Fe, we did a lot of prep on how to protect ourselves so we don't get vicarious trauma. But it is true that I get affected by clients, but hopefully through my own self-care practices and having an incredible partner who's incredibly supportive and understanding, I don't experience a lot of depression, honestly, yeah. at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like when I talk with health workers or policemen or, in your case, a therapist that deals with trauma, they see the seedier side of the world.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to make a positive, you know, feel positive about our world when they're seeing the worst part.
Yes.
And yet, for the most part, society's pretty good.
Right. Absolutely.
So, okay. Let me see. And we had a little question stuck in here. Are you the only therapist there?
No. We have had two different therapists since I've been working there. And we currently have a therapist who works with adults. And so when adults come in with sexual assault, Janet will see them right now. And I would get referrals for children. So that it's just the two of us, an adult therapist and then a teen and children therapist.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah.
And
so what can you tell us about your training and what type of modalities that you use in your counseling?
Yeah, I really got extensive training in Santa Fe, the college I mentioned, Southwestern. And it really was an incredible program. I was actually required to do a lot of therapy myself. Everybody was. It wasn't just me. They didn't single me out or anything. But everybody who's a student there had to have so many therapy hours. That was a big part of my training. I also, when I was still up in northern New Mexico, I volunteered at Gerard's House, which is a place for children who are in grief. And I actually did that over like a full year. I worked one semester with one age group of children and then the next semester with another age group of children, like younger and older kids is how it was broken down. I have had training in, so grief, a lot of trauma training. And I also have a certificate for children's mental health. I have training in sand tray and play therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy. I also have training in bibliotherapy, which is using literature with people.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that actually is one of my favorite things to do is share books and read books with children that can help them learn about situations. Let me think what else. Cognitive behavior. I don't really have training in this, but this is a type of therapy I use, which is called walk and talk therapy. And I also have a type of therapy for teens that says, let's go get a bite to eat and talk.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah,
yeah,
that's a little bit like when I would work with teens, I'd do solution-focused therapy, which is, yeah. With teens, they just want to get down to it. And so I would like give them a notebook and say, well, these are some things you need to write down and think about and then come back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
they could get frustrated very fast.
Yeah, and, you know, Susan, I do some solution-focused therapy, too, and I have received training in that. And but it isn't as effective for trauma, necessarily, yeah. as for other kinds of
No,
issues.
It's not a trauma type of therapy.
Yeah, but
no,
occasionally I will ask people how are things working for them, which is directly from solution-focused, yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. We got a little question here. What's the youngest person you work with? And you all, you said sometimes you do work with teenagers and adults, but what's the youngest?
The youngest client I've ever had was 3.
Wow.
Yeah. And there have been other younger kids, 4- and 5-year-old kids, that people have asked me to see where they're just wondering if something happened with them. And so I do play therapy and read books with them and see what kind of red flags pop up with those kids to help determine if there was something that happened.
I had a friend, family, and the boy who was fairly young started beginning to spout sexualized things and talk about things and everything, and we all got pretty suspicious because it was unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up, make a long story short, his father was abusing him, and the father ended up going to prison for quite a while. But it really was, the child was getting so confused about everything and wasn't able to actually play with other kids well.
And, it really does affect children when they are assaulted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's, in many ways, yes.
Yeah. So it was, and they don't feel like they could say anything so that it comes out in odd ways, like they can't come out and tell somebody.
Yeah, it's typically, not typically, but a lot of kids cannot. They've been told not to say anything, and they're afraid to say anything. But yeah, through their play and through like recognizing what happened to a character in a book, they sometimes will say to me, "Oh yeah, that happened to me too." And so it can be really insightful to kind of go about it without like going, "Tell me what happened." You know, they can tell you without those direct questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, good. I just always get amazed. I'm just going to gush a little bit about SAS because they are such an important program in Silver City and they do so much work. And it's, by the way, it's a nonprofit, 501c3. They need your donations like crazy. So
absolutely.
Go to the SAS website and you could just type in Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services and help.
Absolutely. Yeah. So some of the things that SAS does besides provide therapy is we will accompany people to court if needed. And I will go with my clients who are going to court. I'm really willing to do that. But we also have advocates. Rosalind and Arlene are fabulous, and they will go to court with clients as needed. We have crisis intervention. We also will accompany people to medical appointments, especially if they're doing a SANE exam. We will go and help them get through that. I know you guys know Emma McKinley.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is our fabulous public education and outreach person, and we also do local referrals to experts if it's needed.
Yeah, we've had Emma on here a couple times.
Yeah,
and she's like, we have to hold her back because she'll just keep going talking about the things that she does, which is a lot.
Yeah. And so, then I mentioned that we do have forensic interviews too.
Yeah.
That's a piece of getting people seen, is to go to the forensic interviewer and get that done. Yeah,
and
for children.
I want to come back to that because we got to do a station break, but I want you to describe what a forensic interview is.
Well,
if you
might
can,
have to ask
best,
Shannon.
Well, the best you can.
In
yeah.
general, yes, I could.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, here we are. And
you are listening to KURU 89.1's Gender Troubles. And you can also stream us on the web at gmcr.org. And we are interviewing Cindy Livingston from SAS. And our topic for this week, this show is Mental Health Awareness Month. And so we are just talking about the counseling services that are provided at SAS.
Yeah, so let's go. You've mentioned several times forensic service. So I think of forensic like that show that used to be on TV where they had a coroner or something that specialized in forensic things. You know, it sounds like investigative work.
Yeah.
So maybe it
is. It is investigative work, actually. So Shannon has been highly trained to interview children and actually adults with developmental delays. She can also interview. And it's filmed. And there are police officers, and if Child, Youth, and Family is involved, they will sit in another room and watch the interview. And actually, if they have other questions, I think they have a way to ask Shannon, can you ask this or whatever. But it really is an interview to find out if a child or teen will disclose about assault or domestic violence with our new child advocacy center staff. Yeah, so it really is an interview, an investigative interview with a client.
Yeah, I see. And then if it comes out that there's actually been problems in the house and the child has been abused or mistreated, can they also then interview the parents? Like, what do they call it? Give them a summons that they...
Not through SAS. That would become that would come through law enforcement.
Yeah, and then they could go to the house and they could follow up.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's we need to do that more. That's all I'm going to say.
So, since it is Mental Health Awareness Month, why is this designation important, and can you tell us a bit about the history of the designation of this month?
Well, I actually researched this just yesterday, so hopefully my research is accurate. They actually established mental health awareness in 1949.
Wow.
However, and they did it to reduce stigma for people who had mental illness and to give them support. But for the last 20 years, there's been a substance abuse and mental health services, and it's like SAMHAS. And for 20 years, they have really been doing the month of May. And they want to have, like, they just want to present how important it is for people in the world to have mental health, to have positive mental health. And they also, this month is really about figuring out where resources are and where individuals and communities can go for mental health support.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's good, because I grew up in 40s and 50s, and back then, mental health was stigmatized. And there was a lot of, actually, movies made about people in mental hospitals, and some of them were pretty gruesome. And so people have an image of mental health that's actually not healthy.
Absolutely.
And it's
at times. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a difficult thing, even when it's physical, like somebody has a stroke or something, and they have a hard time speaking or walking, or hey, their cognition is impaired. And people tend to distance themselves from that rather than being helpful. They think that it's contagious or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and they're afraid of it for some reason. Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, mental health is not contagious. or mental
positive
disability.
Mental health,
oh, you want mental health to be contagious. Mental disabilities, is not what I meant to say, is not contagious.
Let's continue this conversation about the stigma of getting counseling and because I think it's rarely prevalent, the stigma about getting mental health help. Sorry.
A little tongue twister.
Yeah. I mean, definitely in my culture, I'm Mexican American, Hispanic, and it's getting better, but definitely like elders in the community, when you say you're, you know, taking something for your depression or you're seeing a counselor, or they encourage you to like, oh, just give it to God, you know, and so there's still a stigma in certainly the Hispanic culture around getting help for your mental illnesses. And so I see it changing though, even in my own family. So that's positive, but nice. I know that it's still prevalent in the culture right now. And I'm sure other cultures, ethnicities face similar stigma.
I think it's an education thing. The more people that are educated, the more they're likely to look for mental health counseling. I grew up, and I could say, across the track, sort of, and there wasn't a lot of education, and people wouldn't really understand why anybody would need counseling. Just, you know, stand up for yourself or buck up and deal with it.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. I also think that people can be hesitant to seek mental health services because, like, maybe I'm working with a parent who doesn't want to look at their parenting, and so it's like they don't want their secrets told, and so they might be hesitant to let their child have therapy because they kind of want to keep it all in the family and not have to look at themselves on some level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I just interrupt?
Yeah.
I want to make Cynthia louder. Do I push that up or down?
Cynthia sounds fine in my headphones.
Oh, I'm not hearing her very well.
Oh, okay. Maybe. Well, you don't have headphones on.
We weren't getting into the, you know, where it gets into...
Yeah,
which one? Oh, it goes louder when it goes up. Sorry about that, everybody. I am learning how to do the board. That's the control panel, which overwhelms me. So, Cynthia, again, thank you for being here. And
thank you for having me.
Yeah, and where are we? That was the question.
Number 8, maybe?
Yeah, do you have to be a sexual assault survivor to use the services of SAS?
No, in the 2 instances of a child who comes in under the Child Advocacy Center, I can see them, and they don't have any sexual assault on board necessarily. There could be domestic violence or whatever in the home that is of concern. Or vicarious trauma survivors can be seen.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And we haven't mentioned it, but sexual assault is actually more common than we would like to think. Isn't the figure something like 1/3 of women have experienced sexual assault? And isn't that a very conservative figure?
Yes, that is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so having SAS in a town where it happens. I mean,
yes.
You know, so.
I'm sorry to say it does.
Yeah, so we're not dealing with a small group of people. We're dealing with a very large group of people that really need this type of counseling and help.
Yes, and perhaps this goes in with the stigma that people are afraid to report because they may have been told that they could be hurt if they report, or they may minimize it and say, oh, maybe I was wrong. Maybe that really wasn't assault. And if you have questions like that, you can definitely come to SAS and we can help you sort it out.
And that's where advocates come in, because
absolutely,
many women are afraid to go to court because they become the one that gets grilled and not the perpetrator. They will, well, did you lead the person on? You know, what were you wearing and
yes,
what were you doing and why were you at that person's house and all those kind of things, because we know that sexual assault is most often done by people who the victim knows.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. And so it's that's where advocates come in and will really benefit, you know, trying to get to the bottom of the situation.
Yes, and supporting people who come in our door.
And support the person who comes in and has to face being grilled by especially a prosecutor that goes to court.
Yes.
And they can be somewhat, mostly can be very intimidating.
Absolutely. And when they ask children to go on the stand, it's very heart-wrenching. And there have been a few times when people have asked me to go on the stand to talk about the child, and I'm very willing to do that, represent them after working with them for a while and knowing them well. I can represent them pretty thoroughly, and I'm always honored to do that.
Wow, pretty cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we got a question down here. So is where you work is SAS, and you, which is a silly question because I know you, but how is the program LGBTQIA, long words, long letters, affirmative?
Absolutely. I identify as a lesbian, and I can say on a personal level, I am welcomed and respected and do not feel like my personal choice for love is affected by anybody there. They all support me and care for me. And I feel like that ripples out to any clients who come in, who come under any of those letters. I know that our staff is incredibly welcoming and loving no matter who you are or how you identify.
Yeah, if anything, it makes you more sensitive because you know what it's like to be victimized and you know what it's like to be stigmatized for seeking the love that you feel is right for you.
Yes.
Yeah, so great, yeah. And where are we? We're getting...
Should we do the station ID before we get into another question?
Okay. It's almost 6:30, so we're going to start a little early because I want to get talkative. So we are in Silver City, New Mexico, and this is KURU 89.1 FM. And or you could stream us. Just go to the computer and type in gmcr.org, and you go down there, and it says... It says listen. Yeah, there's three buttons. So when you click on it and you see the website, there's three things. And the very first button says donate. And just like SAS, KURU, the staff and everybody here are all volunteering. This is a volunteer show. In other words, Renee gives up her time, who's an incredibly busy person,
to be here
on the show. And for me, I'm not that busy, so I just kind of hang out here and go on. No, just kidding. It does. You have to be responsible and be here every Wednesday at 6. And the only person who gets paid in KURU is Marcus, he's the manager here, and he gets paid. We call it a stipend because it's, some people would say it's like getting paid, but it's just really a stipend. So everybody here bringing you this community radio is volunteering to do it. And so is just very important for your contributions. And the same goes with SAS. They're nonprofit. They're not, nobody there is getting rich, and they really need your donations. So we live in a society where the people that do good work need donations. Yes. And so, and again, I'm talking with Cynthia Livingston, and we're happy to have her on the show. And
thank you.
She's been, how long have you been working at SAS?
Since 2016.
Wow. So that's like 8 years?
Yes.
And wow. And so you've kind of got the feel of it. Yeah.
Yes, I do. And when you talk about volunteers, I'm not really a volunteer. I'm paid through grants that our boss, Chelsea, writes. However, we have advocates who will answer the phone in the middle of the night who are volunteers, and they go through a 40-hour training to become a volunteer. So it's not an easy task, and we are so grateful for those advocates that volunteer. We also have two advocates who are paid through the grants that Chelsea writes. But anyway, it's such a fabulous organization, and I'm just so thrilled to be a part of it.
Yeah, and didn't Emma start out as an advocate?
She actually did start out as an advocate. Yes,
yeah.
And I won't tell the whole story, but I've known Emma and her family for a very long time. I taught her brother in kindergarten and first grade in White Rock, New Mexico.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so the first day that I do a self-care training for the advocates, and I saw this beautiful tall woman. I'm like, hey, where are you from? And she's like, White Rock. And I'm like, what? I go, I taught in White Rock. And then we found out I taught her brother.
Wow. Where is White Rock?
It's about 12 miles from Los Alamos.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So all the people that live there are probably pretty smart, huh? All the Los Alamos
scientists
workers.
And engineers, and yes, yeah. Yes,
amazing.
Well, well, speaking of self-care, how does SAS help staff practice self-care, and how can the listeners practice self-care?
I love this question. Chelsea, our boss, actually, one of the grants she wrote was about self-care. And we have, because of that wonderful grant that she was awarded, we have been able to do retreats. We've done two different retreats. We just did one this last weekend where we got to go to Truth or Consequences and soak. And the wind died down enough for us to make s'mores. And we soaked, and we did yoga, and really had a wonderful time being together, eating good food. And so when I think about self-care for other people, I think of going out into nature here in our wonderful wilderness and going to the Gila River when you can. Eating good food mindfully is a wonderful self-care practice, which you don't really have to do anything extra for it because you're going to eat, and you might as well do it mindfully and slowly. Also, I encourage people to drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
Water is a huge part of self-care. In fact, whenever a client walks in the door, I always say, can I get you some water? And sometimes they say yes and sometimes no. And I always provide snacks. So eating and loving yourself is a really important self-care thing. Walking on Mother Earth, surrounding yourself with people who are supportive and loving is really important. Seeking out people in the community if you're alone, like UU is a wonderful, welcoming community.
Unitarian Universalist Fellowship.
Thank you, because I always forget. that's, or any other sort of spiritual endeavor that resonates with you is really about self-care. And I know that UU is a little bit different. It's not really religious, but it really talks about social justice there. So you have opportunities to get involved there with really important issues.
Yeah.
So what about grounding?
Summation. I could sum that up.
Go ahead.
It's good to be with people and always be in community. And a lot of people don't know how to do that, but I'm a firm believer in volunteering. A good way to become part of a community, it's kind of like Kennedy said way back, Jack Kennedy said, don't ask what the government can do for you, but ask what you could do for the government or for people. You know, don't ask what you could give, but what you could give.
Yes.
And I think that's always was a good slogan and made me kind of appreciate him. But anyway.
I do want to reemphasize that having community is a huge part of positive mental health.
Yes, really, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then along with community, go up to Cherry Creek or someplace.
Yes.
Or go to the Gila River, which I like. And
absolutely.
Sit with your feet in the water and think about things. I know people take lawn chairs and they put the lawn chair in the water and sit on it. And
I absolutely do that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way to get peace because we live in a frenetic world, and we really need to have
peace. One of my favorite self-care practices is grounding, especially out in the Gila. I love to, sit on the ground or a giant rock, warm rock, and just, let the ground suck up all my negative energy and release it.
Yes. Yeah.
Barefoot.
Yes, you get those microbes and all that good stuff into your body. And actually being out in nature and exercising releases those positive endorphins that can really shift your mood and make you feel happier.
Yeah, so that's good. And they also say, because I know all these people that do all kinds of things, like go barefoot all the time, but what it does is it balances the pH in your body and makes then your body healthier. But we have rules about barefoot, but and you could go barefoot on your lawn or on the dirt if you don't have a lawn.
Right.
So where are we at? I want to ask more questions.
We're at number 10. So what is the one thing you wish the general public understood about mental health?
I wish they understood that it really is okay to ask for help and that there are services available when you ask. And SAS is one of the places to go to ask for help if you're struggling. And if it's like, say you don't have sexual assault in your background, but you're just like, I don't know where to go, we can give you a referral sheet to other places in the community that can help you.
That's awesome.
And I think one of the myths is that, mental health, once you have mental problems and things, they're always with you. But there's a really good rate of people getting better, being able to cope, to find, coping mechanisms that really work for them, and their life can turn around. People that have been chronically depressed or chronically paranoid about things can find tools and resources that can improve their life. And,
absolutely.
I just wanted to say that because it's not the end of the road. I know people get depressed and they think it's the end of the road.
Yes, and helping them build an awareness that depression is a feeling and it's a pretty dark and heavy feeling, But with some strategies and sometimes medication through a physician, which I'm not, I never would do that, but they could go to a physician maybe to get medication if it would help them. And getting strategies on board and knowing that feelings do pass when you give them the opportunity to with strategies. And I'm not saying that like minimizing depression, because I know how debilitating it can be, but I also have seen people get better and heal. And I couldn't do the work. You asked me when we first started, how do I avoid getting depressed? One of the ways is knowing that people can heal and holding that for them energetically until they know it themselves.
Yeah, I was just thinking of something, because talking about healing, I went through a period in my life where I thought, you know, I wanted to end it. And, you know, it happens a lot with transgender people because they have so much trauma. Yes. It's like 42% is the figure of suicide rate amongst transgender people. But with help and with counseling, I was able to move past that. I didn't do it formally, but I knew a person who really understood things, and he was able to make me realize tomorrow's another day.
Yes.
Which I didn't realize that tomorrow, because I thought I had no future. I had nowhere to go. And so it's that's something that, you know, don't wait. If a person's feeling that way, don't wait. Call somebody, call Cynthia or call Seth, and they could refer you to a person who could really help and or give you, you know, some kind of direction, so you're not alone.
Absolutely.
With those feelings. And I just want to throw that out, because that's a tough one for a lot of people. They can feel so alone.
Cindy, do you have any crisis numbers that we can give people?
I do.
Yay.
I have the crisis line number is 1-866-750-6474. That's the crisis line.
Do you want to repeat that?
I sure do. 1-866-750-6474. And that's for crisis. But if you're not in crisis, but you still are looking for some services, you can call SAS at 575-313-6203. That number is 575-313-6203.
Now, can I say the crisis number is 24 hours?
Yes.
Oh, thank
yes.
you.
And then there's another number that people can call, 988. And that is a number that they can tie you back to our crisis line, but they can just talk to you too. Mm-hmm. As you know, it's possible just to get a live human being at that point to talk to you.
Wow.
988.
And
yes.
What is that called, that number?
I don't know what it's called, but
it's just 988.
Yes, yeah. Call 988 if you are in crisis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, great.
Mm. Yeah. Let's repeat that, like, right before the end of the show, just in case people weren't ready with a paper and pen.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go back to that. And we're almost ready to do. You would like to do it this
sure,
time?
Sure. So you are listening to KURU 89.1 FM in beautiful downtown Silver City. You are listening to Gender Trouble, and you can also stream us on the web or find our archives on gmcr.org. When you get to gmcr.org, you'll find a streaming button and a donating button at the top, very prominent. And we definitely rely on community donations to keep us on air. So consider giving us a donation. And we are interviewing Cindy Livingston, one of the counselors at SAS. SAS stands for Silver Regional Sexual Assault Support Services. And So we'll get back into the last 15 minutes. And one of the questions we have prepared is, how can the community support SAS?
Well, as Susan has mentioned a few times, donating to SAS is really helpful. Coming to SAS fundraisers, we've had quite a few really great things this year. We had the Vagina Monologues, which was really fun and amazing. And we have a fun run that we did at Fort Baird this year for the first time, and it was really a well-attended event, and we would love to see more people come out to that.
I'm proud to say I attended both of those things.
Yeah, yay! other ways to support SAS, volunteer, be willing to be an advocate, and we have other volunteer opportunities, you know, coming in and helping arrange our storage room or things like that. If you want to volunteer, you can reach out to one of our advocates and they can say, yeah, we could use some help doing this. But mostly the donation thing, because it is a nonprofit. And though our boss, Chelsea, is very great at writing grants, we still need donations in order to keep ourselves running.
Now, let me talk a little bit about donations, because I'm a person who believes in tithing. So I tithe 10% of my income, and I tithe it to places that I like the Commons. And I'm kind of red in the face right now because I haven't set up a tithe with SAS, but I will. And but with a lot of different groups in town. One of my favorites is the Imagination Library. I just think it's so great. And but anyway, the way to do it is you have your bank or the place you want to support. You go to monthly donations, and it could be as small as $5. Mm-hmm. I mean, I send $5 a month to Wikipedia. You know, that's nonprofit. Nobody knows that, but it is. And I use Wikipedia all the time. I don't think $5 a month is well worth it. So SAS, who does so much for our community, how about like $5, $10, $15, $20 a month? And the reason you do it that way is that they can then know that that's what's coming in each month. And then they could rely on it and make plans, budget. They could budget that monthly donations. And so, and yeah, so your one-time donations are more than welcome.
Absolutely.
But and really welcome. Hey, even if it's a dollar, you know, they're welcome. But, you know, think in terms of, you don't see, if it's $10 a month, you don't see it. It goes out before you see it, and the bank sends it out, or SAS. I guess SAS has a way to take monthly donations, right?
You know, Susan, I don't know.
Okay. Well, they probably will after this, because it's not hard to set it up.
I think when we interviewed Emma, she said there was a way to.
Yeah, Emma
and
would know.
And there's even a way to set up your cards to round up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That, a lot of places have that. When you go shopping and things, you round up the SAS, which is, you'd be surprised how much they get from that. But, yeah, I'm just a firm believer in, you do these, you know, $5, $10, $20 a month, and you don't see it, but you know it's going out, and it just really helps our community. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm kind of like crawling on my belly here, but I'm asking you to think about that seriously. So, and we're in the last minutes, like 10 minutes. We could talk about anything we like. This is a free-for-all. We've asked all of our questions.
Yeah.
And so, Cynthia, do you have something you would like to, that we might have missed, or you'd like to say, or...
I didn't really say what the Child Advocacy Center was about, and so I want to say that.
Yeah.
It's a place to coordinate investigation, treatment, and to look at child abuse cases. It really, a child advocacy center provides a safe, neutral place for conducting forensic interviews. So that means if a kid was having a really tough time in their family, rather than having to go to the police station to get interviewed about it, they could come to our wonderful place at SAS, which is set up in a child-friendly way, and it hopefully, and I'm pretty sure this is true, it's just not as intimidating as other circumstances when they can come to SAS.
Yeah, I've been in your office, and you've got a sand table there. You've got bookcases filled with all kinds of toys, and so the kids could play in the sand table, like a sandbox. And you could learn a lot about their family structure. In counseling, they call it family sculpting. But you learn a lot about what's going on in that child's family and kind of get ideas on how to intervene when it's necessary. You know, I've seen kids where they're going to pick out people that's their family, right? And
right.
So they will pick out a T-Rex for the dad, and they pick out a little child, a tiny child for themselves, and the mom may be some other animal far away, like a deer, and you go, whoa, is that how their family, that's the way the family looks to that child,
right?
And and you learn a lot. Then you learn how to intervene, maybe to make life better for the person, and that's just wonderful that you could do that. And
yeah, it's quite an honor actually to be a part of children's work. I really do love it. And then I thought of something else I wanted to say about the stigma, and the homeless population, and I don't know what comes first, or like if sometimes you're homeless and you get mental illness, or you're mentally ill and you become homeless, it doesn't really matter. But it's housing insecurity.
Yeah.
And I really feel like in our community, if we had more reasonable prices on houses, maybe we would have less homelessness and less mental illness out on the street.
Yeah, we have two places in this town, the Gospel Mission and SPIN. That's, what's the definition? What's SPIN?
Supporting People in Need, I believe.
Supporting People in Need. So they could use donations and they could use help and volunteers.
And I would like to share a little bit, adding on to what you said about housing insecurity. You know, in the past, when my mental illness has been the worst, is when I didn't know where I was going to live. Thanks to family support, like, I'm not homeless, but I was at risk at one point of being homeless. And when you don't know where you're going to live, like, that contributes so much to depression and suicidal ideation. And so we really, as a community, as a state, and as a country, need to do something about providing affordable housing for working class people, for people who are unable to work, you know, because when you're homeless, like, people think, that they should just go get a job. But when you're homeless, where are you going to shower so that you can practice good hygiene?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to sleep, safely, and, be rested for work the next day? So, like, it's an endless cycle when you see homeless people and struggling with mental health. Like, there's just not enough resources to deal with the and a lot of people are living in their car, so Like, you may not, the homeless issue is bigger than what you see, especially downtown. Yes. Like, a lot of people have to stay in their car because they have nowhere else to go. And sometimes these people have children. And so it's a huge problem. And we need to be innovative in the way we address these issues and allocate funding to it at all levels of government.
Yes, I agree.
Stigmatizing homeless people is not going to help.
It is not.
Yeah, this is a scenario. You lose your apartment because you can't make the rent, so you move into your car. Well, you can stay in your car, but pretty soon it's hard to do laundry. You can't. You don't have a bathroom, so you're just going outside, and you're wearing the same clothes. And pretty soon, if you go to get a job, you're going to look frumpy and wrinkled, and it's a trap. So then, when you can't get a job, then you're more stuck, and mm-hmm. you try your best, but then you show up and they look at you and you smell bad, so then you don't get the job. And so next thing you know, you've been homeless for some time, and then it becomes kind of your way of life because you don't know how to get out of it. It's a trap.
Yes.
First it seems doable, and then it's a trap. And so we need to be sensitive about, nobody chooses to be homeless.
Yeah. And a person who is on the street without a home is like having to be like heightened awareness of what's going on. And so they're in survival mode all of the time. Where's the food coming from? How are they going to get a shower? If they fill out an application, what address do they put on the application, which a lot of times is required? Mm-hmm. And so us figuring out ways to find affordable housing for people is really important. And I think you guys interviewed Joanne DeMichael recently, or somebody did.
On another show I was hearing that.
Yeah. And she is working on legislation to combat this homelessness issue.
I've actually reached out to her because I'm interested in the work she's doing.
Yeah
it's something that's happened all over the country. Mm-hmm. And I think that people have to want to solve the problem. And sometimes I hear all of the things and people talking, and I don't think they want to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. They just want to talk about it. And
that's why
to solve the problem is going to take money. And you know, and this is, not talking about you, but the people up in Farmington came down here, and in their town, they have a lot of problems in their town, and they've been able to solve it in a very positive way. And they came down and talked with us here in Silver City. But the bottom line is, Silver City and Grant County need to be willing to come up with some money to be proactive and not wait until there's problems, but solve the problem, proactively.
It's
worth it to do that.
Mm-hmm. We only have a couple of minutes left, so I want to give those crisis lines one more time and how to reach SAS at the office.
Yes. So, sorry.
It's okay.
So to reach SAS directly, the number is 575-313-6203. That number is 575-313-6203. For the crisis line number that will connect you with SAS as well, it is 1-866-750-6475. Here we go again. 1-866-750-6474. And 988 is also a crisis line number.
Oh, yes, the emergency number, 988, if you're having some kind of crisis, you need to be able to talk to somebody.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Cindy, for coming on the show. We really appreciate you, and thank you for doing the work that you do and for doing it so well. And we are so grateful to have SAS in our community. Mm-hmm. And that's the show for today. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you so much. Yeah.